I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's a slam dunk, dunk.
Check, check. 1, 2. Yeah, I'm good.
Ready. Recording. Nice one. It is Wednesday, which means it's time for a post-Champions League semi-final Front 3 podcast with me, Adam Baldwin, the one and only Lawrence McKenna.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, who else but Dave O'Brien.
Hello. Adam, I didn't ask you before. What did you have for dinner?
I actually made myself some quesadillas, which were pretty banging, I've got to say.
This cultural boy, appropriation dude. At its finest.
That's one way of putting it, I guess. The Champions League semi-finals, guys, the first legs are over. Mm-hmm. Tonight's game, Atletico Madrid versus Bayern Munich, ending 1-0 to Diego Simeone's side. A much more entertaining game, Dave. More shots in the opening 15 minutes of this game than the entirety of Man City versus Real Madrid.
That is why you're on the podcast, Adam, for your stat bangers like that.
That is exactly right.
It was a better game, I think. I think the quality was a lot better. Obviously, there's a lot of technical midfielders in there, but what Atletico did so well was, again, press for the first sort of 30, 35 minutes and then just sit, nick a goal and sit. That goal, though, was a bit of individual brilliance. You know, who knew Sol could take on three players and curl the ball into the far corner? Because I personally didn't. I thought it was a structural, worker of a central midfielder, and he showed that after his his goal, that he sat in there and he just did a cracking defensive job along with Koke. I absolutely love Koke. He's one of those players that you need in your team, a fighter, but then also so good on the ball, good at, brilliant delivery from set pieces. A wonderful signing if anyone decides to go in for him in the summer. But it was a great performance. You know, that what sort of highlighted the collective of Atletico Madrid was that Antoine Griezmann made 7 interceptions in the game. That was 3 more than any other player on the pitch. And he was playing as a striker. But the amount of times that you saw him tracking back in his own penalty area, making tackles, or I think in the first half, he had a little, I think Kingsley Coman got into the box and he had a little tap at him. Give him a little hand on his back, which obviously put Kingsley Coman off. Wasn't a foul or anything, but it's just that like sort of gamesmanship that Simeone's really driven into that side. And I think this team right now is better than the team that got to the Champions League semi-final. Sorry, final. Final.
Wow.
The big one.
Of course, Dave mentioned it there. Sol's good was so good. What a goal was trending on Twitter. the first half and most of the second. But Dave says it there, Lawrence. This Atletico Madrid team may well be better than the team that reached the final in 2013.
I was saying to the guys I was watching with, if Real Madrid and Atletico make it to the final, this will not only be a better final, but also a completely different final to the final that we saw just a few years ago. Not only because that's literal, it is a different final, but also because tactically it's going to play out so differently, and it'll be fascinating to see how Atletico deal with Real Madrid and how Atletico sort of dealt with by Real Madrid.
Do you think it will be an Atletico Real Madrid final? You're talking almost as if it's happening. We're only halfway through.
No, I'm saying I hope it would be if that was the case. What I really enjoyed tonight was obviously the way that Griezmann was sort of leading the line with Torres alongside him. It was lovely. I mean, that counter attack when they were under the most pressure in the game, to go down the other end and watch Torres cut in like classic Torres, and then get the ball so close with the outside of his boot. It was beautiful. I think this was a pretty classic game, actually. And I really enjoyed it. You know, Pep was trying to change things and skew things around. And, they changed their point of attack so many times. you know, it started going through Alonso, then it started going sort of into the almost Barcelona-esque balls in behind. It was really fascinating to watch. And then the sort of desperate way that Atletico were defending at one point was just fantastic. Especially, I think tonight, I actually think the goalkeeper had a very solid performance, as did Mark Clattenburg.
Dave, Lawrence is talking there about Bayern Munich changed in point of attack. I mean, tactically, how do you think Guardiola got this one? Because there was a lot made of the fact that he dropped Müller from the starting 11. And in fact, his away record in these knockout stages isn't great. 7 defeats, 10 draws and 4 wins. And he's only actually won one of his last 11, in fact.
The really weird point about this Bayern team is that it's sort of exactly the same style as what he came to Bayern, a very good counter-attacking physical side. What he's built, it kind of feels still like a counter-attacking side that would really do well breaking on teams. It's got a lot of pace down the flanks, and it's got two players that we spoke about before. They've got the best movement and aerial ability in the world in Lewandowski and Thomas Müller. Lewandowski was so good at Dortmund because they got the ball to him. He looks like a player that plays on the peripheral now, sorry, like that just plays waiting in the penalty area. It looks a little bit like a Louis van Gaal striker that waits all day for the ball, will get one chance in a game, and if they don't score, it will look like they've had a bad game, but if they do score, it will look like they've had a good game. But he really got it wrong again. Last season in the semi-final, the first leg he lost again, and then the second leg he went out tactically playing a 4-2-4 or a 4-4-2 in a way, which he might have to do again. But then he got massively outnumbered in midfield. What would have suited this game today was potentially playing a little bit count, like playing Atletico into a position that they don't like, which is having the ball and then breaking on them. Like, you could sit deep with Alonso, with Vidal in midfield, the two wingers exactly the same, Koeman and Costa, and then just leave Lewandowski and Müller up front. Those two can do a fantastic pressing job. Those two tactically could defend an area, but I think that's the issue with Pep Guardiola. He's become so obsessed with possession, he's forgotten the other parts of the game of football, which is defending, which is counter-attacking.
I actually feel like Guardiola's gotten away from the possession obsession that he had just a few years ago.
I don't think it's. I think it's a different. If it's a different obsession, he doesn't have someone of Lionel Messi's quality in the middle, and I feel he's struggling to get the ball central. I think the big thing with playing the setup he played today, it looked like it could work, but there was no link between the centre midfielders and Lewandowski and the wingers. It was very like two sided, where it go into central mid, it go Alonso, then to one of the centre mids, and then it come back out. And then sort of they'd have a two on two on the flank, or even Atletico would get a 2v1 defensively. What Guardiola has tried to do this season with the fullbacks coming inside is isolate fullbacks one on one. But with the Atletico Madrid team, they're not going to leave a fullback alone. They're always going to have either a central midfielder there, or more likely one of the left midfielder or right midfielder covering them. Yeah. And that's what we saw countless times. The ball goes to one of the wingers and it'd be a 2v1 in Atletico's favour. They'd nick the ball and counter attack.
But I feel like that's part
of the problem. Goal sort of came like that. It came in that sort of situation. Oh, absolutely. It broke down.
But I don't know if that's down to his tactic more as the way that Simeone played him. And I actually feel that's the problem with Guardiola, is when he's found out, sometimes he has a really good tactical way around it. And I actually think that Simeone second-guessed him a number of times tonight and worked that out really well.
Who is your favourite to go through then, Dave? Because obviously a 1-0 lead in the first leg. I'd like to say we're at home, going to the Allianz Arena. Bayern did have chances in the second half. Of course, David Alaba hit the bar. It's difficult to see who is potentially the favourite going into that second leg, despite how well Atletico suffocated Bayern Munich.
I think the big thing is press them from the start. Really go at them again in the first half an hour. Juventus did that brilliantly and got back into the game 2-0 up. The tie was square again. That's what Atletico Madrid need to do. They need to go at them. They need to make them uncomfortable. They need to not let them settle, not let them play out the back and get nervous. That's what they need to do. They need to really be aggressive again. I thought that Augusto Fernandes in central midfield had a really good game covering the other sort of central midfielders pressing. But then again, the two wide players were great, Koke and Saul, we spoke about. But Gabri, what a player he is. You know, I feel like Atletico Madrid are really sort of, this academy is really starting to produce top-class central midfielders. If we think about who's come through in the last few years, we've got Gabri, who I just mentioned there, who is a wonderful player. Can press, can tackle, can play the ball. Then you've got Koke, the next one, who's almost a better level than Gabby, that's technically so fantastic, got a great eye for a pass. And then you've got Saul coming through now, who looks like a very, very technically gifted footballer, but can flaming work. And then there's the next generation, Oliver Torres, who pretty much is the new Xavi in a way. That's what he's like. So it's really interesting that in this next generation, they could pretty much have a Busquets, Xavi, Iniesta in Koke, Saul, and Oliver Torres. And that is credit to Atletico Madrid, credit to their investment in their youth players.
Do you think Atletico Madrid are going to go through, Lawrence, and if they do indeed press from the start and sort of capitalise on this lead they've already built up?
Well, especially if they do score early on, then they get that away goal, which is, you know, that's what you're looking to do, is basically shut down the opposition, not give them an away goal, and then give yourself the best chance going away to the Allianz. I mean, didn't we see a similar situation a few years ago with Real Madrid visiting Bayern, and that one got completely shut down. So, you know, there's obviously the ability in both sides to be able to win this one. I think if Atletico score early, it's beyond Bayern to get back at them then.
A lot of people's favourites to win the whole thing, Atletico Madrid this season. Certainly judging by a poll we did on the Football Bubble last week, they were certainly way out in front. The question is who they're going to meet in that final if they do indeed go through. Dave, Manchester City versus Real Madrid last night, we were covering it live for TFR. Not the most thrilling game. The biggest news pre-match was, of course, Ronaldo getting ruled out. What did you make of the change of tactics going into the game? It was who replaced him? It was Lucas
Vasquez. It was an interesting one. Vasquez, whenever I've seen him, is more of a right winger. And he was playing more on the left than on the right, which for me made him a little bit, not redundant, but it made him a lot less effective on that left-hand side. You know, he's a classic right winger that's always going to try and go on the outside of an opponent. And it was a bit of a mistake, I'd say, from Zidane. He should have stuck Bale to the left, stuck Vasquez on the right, and then, you know, tried to play through that middle. But I think what we found out with Manchester City is they've turned into a pretty decent defensive side. Their shape was really good yesterday through most of the game. When Kevin De Bruyne was playing off Aguero, there were some moments where they got him behind the fullbacks. They looked like they can create some chances. Pepe obviously got a pretty silly yellow card from a tackle on De Bruyne when they're breaking. But then Pellegrini really killed the game in a way when he brought Iheanacho on and moved De Bruyne out left. It was a very silly mistake, really, in my eyes. It just took the momentum that City had on the counter attack and just threw it in the bin. And then Pepe and Ramos were more comfortable playing up against two opponents, and not having to deal with one of them dropping. And it just sort of, you know, the whole tie died. Zidane didn't make any changes that influenced the game. Pellegrini fell asleep. And it was just rubbish. And it's complete opposite to tonight, where one manager really dominated in Diego Simeone, and his substitutes were good. And again, Pep's were questioned, but it's interesting to see. And I do think, I kind of got a feeling that City are going to go through it, really do. I don't know why.
Really?
And I hope Atletico give them a spanking in the final. That'll be brilliant.
I think they probably would. That's the issue, is that actually that's why I don't want City to go through, because I feel like if Atletico do go through, there is a real beating waiting there.
Yeah, I don't feel like Pellegrini would be able to combat what Diego Simeone's got his side doing so well.
I don't even know if it's Pellegrini. I actually just think it's Man City, the actual team, would struggle to counter with that intensity.
They certainly struggled last night to create any sort of chances, as did Real Madrid, who without Ronaldo were lacking a certain spark. But it's the first game for Sergio Aguero, I think, in five Champions League games where he's had a shot on target. He only managed one in the end. He was starved of service, to be fair, and David Silva going off certainly didn't help. But they struggled to create last night, Lawrence.
Yeah, certainly so. I think that was part of it, was that when their system didn't work, then they did struggle to create anything that looked like a meaningful chance. However, I think it's not just about chances created or sort of goals scored. There's more to the game than that. And I think for that reason, they won't be upset. You know, basically they mitigated what the other team was doing. And that was the main aim for the first leg, was feel out the other side and basically give yourself a chance in the second. And that's exactly what they've done. That's why they're in the positive position that they are.
Ronaldo could miss the second leg, Dave. David Silva also looks like he's going to be out. Which team do you think is going to miss their sort of key player more?
I'd say Ronaldo was the bigger miss. I think this season in Champions League, he's really looked... Sorry, excuse me.
Bless you. Poor little
You're excused.
Guy. Poor
You're
Dave.
Excused.
Jesus. He's really showed quality in the Champions League, especially in that second game against Wolfsburg, that hat-trick that won them the game. It showed real determination. Like, he kind of wants it again. He looks hungry.
What music do you think Ronaldo is playing?
Get a quick drink.
Go and get a drink, Jake. What music do you think Ronaldo is playing?
I'm not sure what music he was playing. He was certainly looking at Gary Lineker's Instagram account, which had the news of Ronaldo's injury on it, which was interesting to see in that photograph.
I thought he was looking at his own account.
No, it's Gary Lineker's, it turns out. His Instagram account.
Really?
Which is a bit of an ego boost for Gary, of course.
Really? Was it really his Instagram account?
Honestly. I swear. I bet someone is going around photoshopping Gary Lineker's Instagram account on...
Yeah, Gary Lineker.
Photoshop skills, I've seen. That was where the news first broke, apparently, of the injury. Or one of the first places Gary Lineker posted up a little video on Instagram.
It was Gary Lineker.
Ronaldo was obviously checking it out on Twitter or whatever.
Yeah. Am I injured? I don't know. I'll wait for Gary Lineker to tell
Gary Lineker me. Says so. But yeah, he could be out, which is going to be a blow. I mean, who do you think is going to go through, Lawrence? I think Dave's already said he thinks City's going to go through. We're not sure if we want to see that, but what do you reckon?
I think it'll be an All Madrid final.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. Absolutely love it.
I think Gareth Bale was unrelenting. In the first leg.
Oh, yeah. Unrelenting. Like it. And the other European game this week, or big European game for us, is, of course, Liverpool Villarreal.
Don't know what I mean.
Versus the Yellow Submarine.
Good. It's the Yellow Submarine Derby, isn't it? Is what they're calling it. Yeah.
Yes, I like that. How are you feeling going into this one, Lawrence? Confident after last round's heroics?
Yeah, I mean, Liverpool are obviously going to go into this one with a certain level of confidence. They feel like they played their second string, but certainly a side that would be considered to not be the starting 11 they're going to play against Villarreal on the weekend. Klopp managed to spin that one quite nicely. It was sort of a match where everything but the football seemed important on that day. And obviously, there's massive news around Liverpool this week to do with, you know, the findings for the 9-6, which is fantastic. You know, fuck the sun, those guys still can't seem to do that, but I don't want to make it about that. The bigger point is there's truth and justice for all those out there. And if that's what they want, then that's what we should probably give them. And so there's still a feeling around Liverpool this season that there's something yet to be done with this side and that the team aren't really over, if you like, at this point. The problem is Sacco's been taken out by Sacco. Mm-hmm. Chan's been taken out by whatever happened against Dortmund, and Origi was taken out by Funes Mori. So that's three guys.
Benteke's back, though, Lawrence. He is back.
Yeah, I mean, but I'm talking about key players here, Adam. So those guys...
my mistake, sorry.
But I mean, the point was that actually he's laid out a fairly good blueprint as to how to lead the line there, Origi. You know, Benteke at times looks a little bit like, oh, well, you're asking me to do the undoable here, the role that's sort of, you know, it's not me or whatever. But Origi wasn't marketed as that role when he first came to Liverpool, and yet he managed to do that quite well. So I wonder if there's sort of a blueprint there for someone like Benteke to step into, because Sturridge, you know, is not Origi, clearly. Very different kind of striker, looks for different kind of passes, looks for different kind of space. So if you were to start the game with someone like Benteke, which would be a doubt, because I think it will be Sturridge, I think, you know, there's still space there for him to make an impact. I think they'll start with Sturridge, and I think they'll go with... For some reason, he seems to be playing Firmino, even though he drifts crazily in and out of games. It's almost like you're playing with 10 guys sometimes.
Dave, talk to me a little bit about Villarreal. I mean, Klopp, before the game, has come out and said, you know, Liverpool need to show the highest level of football. Villarreal, unbelievably strong, is how he put it. But most Liverpool fans will surely be feeling somewhat confident after they beat the favourites for the entire competition in Borussia Dortmund.
Yeah, I think they've got to feel confident. But then again, they shouldn't rule out the ability of this Villarreal side. They've done very well in La Liga this season. And they got the Champions League fourth spot in La Liga. It looks like they're going to be going to the Champions League next season. They've got some decent players in there. Bruno, if you remember him for the old days of Villarreal, when they had Santi Cazorla and Riquelme and that. Bruno was around that side as a young lad, and now he's finally come into the side at defensive midfield. A very good player. But you've got to look at Denis Suarez on the right, Barcelona youth player, who's a very technically gifted forward, 6 assists in the Europa League this season, top assister. And then you've got Bakambu, the big striker, who's
such a great
been
name, isn't it?
Pretty decent. I watched the game against Sparta Prague, and he had an absolute world. He could have scored a hatful. One of his finishes was just brilliant. It was like outside the area, bottom corner, side foot. It was just a great goal. So he's going to be a big threat. And, I think if he can get into that space in between Moreno and Kolo Touré, if he's going to play, or Lucas, whoever's going to play left centre back,
he'll probably not.
Yeah, that could be an issue.
Blue.
Then you've also got the legend that is Roberto Soldado, who has had a pretty decent season, you know, playing the slightly deeper role to his strike partner. But they're not the worst side in the world, and they've gone along well in La Liga, and they've got a decent defence. So Liverpool could struggle if they sort of go out there a bit too gung ho away at Villarreal. Yeah. El Malagigal, is it? That's the one. That's the ticket. Mm.
Give me a cheeky bloody score prediction, then, guys.
I'll go 1-1.
Ooh, okay. Nice one. Take the away goal back to Anfield. Dave, what do you reckon?
I'm going to go for a cheeky 2-1 to Villarreal. Ooh. But the important away goal for Liverpool.
I think Liverpool would take that. Yeah, Liverpool would take that.
Yeah. I think 1-1 is a safe bet. I agree with Lawrence there. I think 1-1 is going to finish. 1-1 it is.
We don't need to watch the game. We'll all just agree it's 1-1.
No, don't worry. Don't worry about it. Brilliant. We've called it, mate. We have called it. We probably should talk a little bit about Hillsborough, Lawrence. I mean, you mentioned it there. There was obviously a vigil today in Liverpool to remember the 96 football fans who tragically died in the 1989 Hillsborough disaster. Now, this was a day after the inquests into the tragedy. Yes, they concluded the victims were unlawfully killed. Now, if you're not fully aware of what happened at Hillsborough, you want some more context about what is the biggest tragedy in British sporting history, I will leave a link in the description of this show to a fantastic report by David Conn in The Guardian. Very detailed account about not only the police negligence leading up to the tragedy, but also about how the police force tried to cover up and hide the truth for essentially almost 3 decades now. So definitely go and check that out. Of course, incredibly moving to read that, but also some very shocking and astounding revelations in there, which is definitely worth a read. But after 27 years, Lawrence, you said there, the justice is finally there. People are now calling for accountability, perhaps is the next step.
Yeah, I mean, justice is, there's an element of justice in there. I think that, you know, there's a lot of different facets to the story. David Conn does do a really good job of talking about those. There's a very satisfying story from Kenny Dalglish that I think he told on TalkSport and I used in a documentary a few years ago. Unfortunately, it's an interview with Keys and Gray. But what he did say was that on the day after, Kelvin McKenzie called Liverpool and basically said to Kenny's secretary, look, let me talk to him. I want to work out how we can make this right. And he put, so she called him and Kenny said, I don't want to talk to him. And she said, you know, he's you know, pretty much begging to talk. So I was like, okay, I'll talk to him. So he talks to me, he says, what can we do to make this right? And he says, same type, same photo, same everything on the front. All you got to do is put we lied. And he says, I can't do that. And he says, and I can't help you. And he put the phone down on him. And ever since that, I think what we forget, as a football fan, you know, and I think Kenny Dalglish makes great, you know, if, I know that the whole Suarez thing really tainted what Kenny Dalglish did for football in the modern age. But there was also, there's a huge part of that man who did, like even now, just talking about it, it is something which is, sends tingles down your spine how powerful and how much he did at that time for the club. You know, the only important thing here is the people who were lost and the families and what they lost on that day and the way that they didn't need to. And, you know, the big, you know, fans can chant at each other, but I think what those fans forget, and especially, you know, when we get into European matches and the United fans were chanting and other fans were chanting, those sorts of things, those families still go to the game and they're still painful memories really linked into that club. It's all well and good singing about whatever, but there are people who actually lost people who still go to that club because that club stuck by them for 27 years ever since and been there for them whenever they needed them.
Mm.
And there's something really touching about that. That is, it's nothing to do with, we could do this as a PR move, we can make ourselves look better, we have to do this. It was literally that Kenny Dalglish made that club into a family in that time. He went to practically every funeral that you could get to. I think some of them were all at the same time, so we couldn't go to them all. But it was just, it's harrowing, and it still sits over the city now. I know people say, you know, disparaging things about Liverpool, sitting on grief and all those kind of things and living in the past. But just for a second, you know, it doesn't matter who you support what you think about other things that those fans have done. For the 96, you know, like yesterday was a massive thing because I think they were looking for public recognition. And, you know, for people from Liverpool, it's really important. For me, it should also be important for football fans because there are other things that are linked to that, you know, like brotherhood within the game, basically making sure that everyone's safe in a football ground and, you know, also making sure that the general public are not lied about. I mean, I think that's what I find the biggest problem with people reveling in it is, it was lies. And they still don't. They, you know, even now, it's still hard to talk about, I think, for a lot of people. And that's sat over a lot of people. So hopefully, I don't think it's brought an end to a lot of the terrible stuff that goes on between some of the fans. But I think it certainly has brought an end to it for the families brought close to it. So there's something amazing about that, really.
Yeah, there is some, like you say, I think the verdicts before were sort of about how it's accidental death. There was no real culpability about who was responsible for this tragedy. And of course now the verdict of unlawful killing means the blame lies squarely at the feet of the police.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Which is something that, you know, these families have been trying to prove almost for, as I said, 3 decades. The thing you bring up there about the Sun is interesting because, of course, famously the Sun reported the truth, which, of course, we all know were lies about the fans sort of being drunk and being and violent
and beating and up causing, policemen and stopping them from reviving people. And it,
and it was bizarre. Causing,
like, it made no sense.
Yeah. And, you know, you referred to Kelvin McKenzie, though, who's obviously the former editor of The Sun. The weird or...
I'm just going to put it out there. So, that man is a cunt.
Yeah. I mean, that's...
he's the embodiment of everything that's wrong with society.
There was even further controversy, I think it was today, actually, where, of course, across every newspaper front page in Britain, it was all about Hillsborough and the justice for 96. Conspicuously missing from the front page of The Sun was any mention of the verdict from the inquests and as well Times.
It got page 10.
And the Times as well, which is the sister newspaper of The Sun, also owned by News International.
Now, if you think there's not a problem there, then you've got a real issue.
The Times one, just to clarify, I think that was the first edition that they had. So they
The second edition did
have it on the front page. Yeah. So I think it was that the first edition was published before the verdict was actually given. And then the second edition did have it on the front page.
Yeah, so the issue is still that actually, I mean, essentially, we know they're both Murdoch papers. It's an institutional problem. That Conservative government was so in with Murdoch at that time. You know, I mean, Margaret Thatcher, another disgusting individual. Both of those people made sure that the truth wasn't allowed out. And it's not only the newspapers, but it's also the government that stopped it at that time. And that's why, you know, the irony of David Cameron apologising to those families is massive, because no one wants an apology from David Cameron. They want something done in the first place. The government and the institutions surrounding it has massively let those families down, and just fans in general, like not just Liverpool fans, all fans were let down on that day because they had another agenda, was that they hated the working classes, they hated what those people represented, and this was a really good opportunity for them. And Murdoch struck at the right time, and unfortunately he's built upon that and built on a culture of fear. And, you know, as much as I, you know, think Sky Sports is a decent network, it's still run by that guy. And he's basically put a stranglehold on English football. And it's a worse place for having Rupert Murdoch around.
Take that front page in isolation. It's such a strange decision when they are obviously fully aware of the situation and the whole controversy surrounding the Sun to not. That was almost a chance to get some small shred of respectability.
I mean, what I feel sorry for, again, is the people who work for the Sun who don't agree. I mean, you know, obviously, ideally, people who disagree with what the Sun do wouldn't work with them. But
and even on the Times, I saw Rory Smith, who is a Times journalist, questioning the decision not to put that on the front page.
That's right. Journalists should be allowed to do that.
The journalists in the Times were baffled by the fact it was on the front page, even if it was a first edition.
Yeah, I mean that's what is interesting. Is it sort of even if it wasn't on the first edition or whatever, you'd still question why it wasn't on the first edition. I know the news hadn't come out yet, but then you'd still even say, well, you know, surely the editors knew that was coming. So surely there's some sort of, okay, well, we can write something very quickly for this. Do you know what I mean?
Very strange one. But
doesn't make any sense.
At the very least, definitely go and check out David Kwan's article, because it's a fascinating, very moving read. And at least there is now the beginnings, at least, of justice, obviously, for the 96 people who tragically lost their lives.
I also have the audio part of the documentary that I made a few years ago. I'm not trying to plug my own work for this. I'm just saying it's sort of... it reads all the 96 names and sort of gives an account of what was going on at that time from Bruce Grobbelaar, Kenny Dalglish, and a couple other people. I think that's on SoundCloud, so I'll put that in the link in the description below as well. It's probably worth listening to.
Please do. Also on Liverpool, I mean, we mentioned it earlier about how Sacco is going to be missing from tomorrow night's game at Villarreal. Mm-hmm. He has decided not to challenge the result of his failed drug tests.
Still don't know
what that means. Facing a lengthy ban from football. Could miss Euro 2016 as well, which is extremely likely.
Could
if he gets a six-month ban. I mean, it does add up. But again, it's a weird one. I mean, we did mention it briefly on Sunday about how there is this sort of this spectre of perhaps a big revelation coming out about drugs in football. And there does seem to be a notion of the game almost burying its head in the sand. It does feel like this could be the first of many cases that come out, even if it's not a case of performance enhancing drugs, but it is, as is suspected, a fat burning substance.
That's the point, is it's all speculation at this point. So it sort of gives people really great salacious headlines, which is, you know, what was it? How badly was he cheating? Was it an amphetamine? Those kind of things. And then obviously it gives people the right to speculate over Brendan Rodgers and treatment of players and all those kind of things, and how desperate he was to get back into the team.
The news going around is that he did turn up for pre-season overweight, and Liverpool weren't happy. And you know, the term I heard used was pressured him to lose weight. Now, of course, that doesn't give any excuse for Sacco to go and use substances which perhaps he shouldn't be using, or certain supplements. But either way, he could be facing a six-month ban. Another player who is facing a ban, Dave, is Dele Alli, whose season could be over, facing a three-game ban for violent conduct after he gave Claudio Jakob of West Brom a little punch in the old stomach.
A little punch in the old stomach.
A little, just a friendly punch, you know, one of them.
Gets him out of the game. He's ruined it.
Yeah.
He's got that edge. He's going to get a red card. Ban him. No. If you watch the game, Claudio Jakob had been giving him an absolute beating.
Keeping him all game.
He'd hacked him down about four times. And if Dele Alli wants to give him a little dig in the stomach and he got caught, then he does the time. But don't say that he's got to get rid of his edge. Because the thing, if you get rid of his player's edge, that's the game gone. We've seen Wayne Rooney lose his edge and he's no longer explosive. He hasn't got that anger anymore. They used to drive him forward. So
yeah, but Dave, I disagree. I mean, no, don't combine that edge with hitting someone. I think, you know, you can remain on the edge or whatever.
No, I would have done that. If someone like that, like Claudio Jakob, right, if he was giving me a bit of a beating, right, I see him coming into the box, a little cheeky dig to the stomach. Yeah, of course. Gamesmanship, Lawrence. Simeone would have been well happy if I'd done that. Would have given me an extra contract, new contract, mate.
Yeah, Simeone is on the sideline going, listen, if all of you don't come off with yellow cards in this leg, I'm going to be upset.
You're out, lads. You're bloody out.
I think I sort of have to side with Lawrence. Even though he's 20 years old and he's young and tempestuous, punching someone is crossing.
Adam, I thought we were in this together.
As much as I like Dele Alli, he's a...
I thought we were in this mentality relationship together.
He could be facing a free game ban, which means the season is over, which some people are saying ends any sort of slim hopes that Tottenham had of getting back into the title race. Of course, they drew with West Brom at White Hart Lane on Monday night, with many people now coming to the conclusion that Leicester are indeed going to win the title. They could, in fact, win it on Sunday at Old Trafford if they beat Manchester United, Dave. A Manchester United side who are unbeaten in how many games?
75,000.
Jesus.
No, probably more about three or four games. Wow. I'll tell you what, I hope that they do not win the league at Old Trafford. That'd be terrible. I'd be really upset about that. First Ruud van Nistelrooy's record gets crushed by Jamie Vardy. Then Jamie Vardy has the cheek of it to win the title at Ruud van Nistelrooy's old stomping ground.
Jamie Vardy definitely won't be one of the ones winning it, surely, because he's banned.
I hope he comes on. If they do, I hope he does a John Terry and comes onto the pitch, full kit, shin.
That's what I mean, he will do. 100% he's going to do that, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, Dave, the thing is, you have ruined quite a bit this season, as Manchester United ruined quite a bit this season. I mean, they were the ones that relegated Aston Villa. Will they be another? Louis van Gaal's hardly good at a party, is he? He has to tell people to applaud things. So, you know, it is possible that United here could still win, but then if Spurs drop points the next day, they could still be winning the league.
That's interesting, isn't it? I've got a feeling they're going to do it. I've got a feeling.
Yeah. I've got a feeling it's going to be a draw.
Hopefully Van Gaal's party poopers strike again.
Just shuts it down.
In a very similar vein to the way that your man at West Brom did, Adam.
Good old King Tony.
Good old Tone.
Yeah. Yeah, he was upset.
That was upsetting, wasn't it?
I mean, Leicester deserve to win the title, in my opinion. I think Spurs are the best team in England in terms of, you know, arguably we've played the best football, you know, we scored the most goals, conceded the fewest goals, but when...
The key stat is that you're not top of the league.
Yeah, when it comes down to it, the crucial games, we haven't performed. And I think, you know, losing to Leicester at home, dropping points when we were 2-0 up against Stoke, losing to Newcastle, dropping points when we were 2-1 up against Arsenal, I think we've dropped too many points at home and we haven't taken those chances. Unfortunately, I think Leicester have, really. You know, they might, you know, they had those 4 or 5 1-0s in a row. They may not be playing the sparkling champagne football, but I think they deserve it, essentially. And if they win at Old Trafford, which I hope they do, then I don't think you can be too annoyed, because they deserve to win the league. Moving on, I did want to talk a little bit about Luis Suarez once again. Now, we were speaking on the weekend about how Jamie Carragher believes not signing Luis Suarez was Arsene Wenger's biggest mistake as Arsenal manager. And if he had signed him, they would have won at least 2 league titles. Now, I found a very interesting article on Reddit Soccer about chance conversion, Dave.
Oh, yeah.
About statistics, mate. It's right up your street.
I'm just going to mute my channel. I'll let you two get down to this.
And essentially, what he is talking about is that Arsenal's failings this season, or one of the main failings, has been chance conversion. Now, he's arguing that, you know, Giroud has a 13% conversion rate.
Poor.
He's not been cutting the mustard. Sanchez, 17, respectable, from the wing, of course. Walcott, 11. Ramsey, 7%. He's taken 68 shots a goal this season, and his conversion rate's only 7%.
He's never been famous for a good conversion rate, though, has he, as Ramsey?
When you look at Luis Suarez, this article is saying, 26% of the time this guy scores. And he posits that if he was on the end of every one of those Ozil chances that Giroud have missed, he would have racked up quite a few goals, Dave. And Arsenal may have won the league with a record tally.
Yeah, but he may have also gone downhill and not played very well for them in that time.
I mean, that is the unfathomable nature of these hypotheticals.
Yeah.
But I thought it was interesting nonetheless that we were talking about it just a few days ago about Suarez, you know, what if they'd have bought him? And this is a statistical look at that situation, not based, although it is somewhat based on hypotheticals, he's got
somewhat stat. It's based completely on the idea that Luis Suarez playing up front for Arsenal is going to get as many goals as him playing up front for
some sort of fact, as opposed to just, oh, what if Suarez played for Arsenal? Yeah, he'd probably do all right, actually.
So I think Suarez's chance conversion was around 33% in his last two seasons in the Premier League, so it could have been even better. So Arsenal could have won the league by even more points.
That's science, Lawrence.
Yep.
Fact. Might as well give him the trophy. Let's go to the Arsenal ground tomorrow and hand them the Premier League trophy.
I understand what you're saying, though. You know, you can say Suarez has converted 26% of his chances this season. There's nothing to say that would have happened at Arsenal. There's a whole infinite number of variables which would change that percentage.
Dave?
Lawrence.
There are an infinite number of variables. I mean,
it's interesting to hear your counter argument to this. I find that interesting.
Well, my counter argument is that not all chances are the same. You can't grade them all in the same way. And the way that they create chances for Suarez are that they put him in positions where he can score. I know he's got a fantastic finish on him. I know he scored some great goals this season. But at the same time, Barcelona are putting him into those positions. I know that he's pretty much just correlating that because Ozil creates chances, therefore he will create chances for Luis Suarez. There's a possibility that's the case. But at the same time, I think he's also then taken out all of the sort of human factors, which is basically that the reason Suarez has calmed down, etc., is because he's at an institution which has calmed him.
I think he's still mental. He's just not cracked recently.
Well, that's what I'm saying. He's calmed down. I'm not saying he's not crazy. I'm just saying he's calmed down.
He didn't... At Liverpool, wasn't it? A year and a half where he didn't do anything stupid and then he did some stupid shit. Yeah.
Do you think at the very least, though, Lawrence, that, you know, as we say, there's so many variables and it's almost arbitrary doing this, but it at the very least shows where Arsenal's problem is. The chance conversion is so low for those key players.
Yeah, absolutely. I do feel like people are very harsh on the players. You know, there's a conversation, I think, on one Arsenal channel, I can't remember which one it was, where they were basically saying every time a player misses or every time there's a mistake made, the way that the fans react tends to be so negative.
That's just years of frustration built up to this point now where it feels like it's all coming to a head.
I agree, but at the same time, I also feel like it's all relative. So, you know, the Ramble was saying the other day, there's a relativity to the way that United are failing. Because failing to go into fourth and winning in the FA Cup is kind of failing to the way that they were comparing them with, you know, the likes of Coventry, who haven't finished in the top six for 47 years, like everyone's bloody saying, or 46 years. Either way, a long time. So there's a lot of clubs out there that don't even have that option, you know? It's not like, you know, I understand that it becomes quite boring, it becomes quite monotonous, but it's almost like, you know, you don't know what you've got till it's gone.
I agree in some way, but I think it's a two-way street. It takes two to tango, Lawrence. The fans need to be given something to cheer. You know, look at Liverpool. How many years has it been since you won the title? But they're trying to make changes to get Liverpool to where they believe they deserve to be.
I agree with what you're saying, but then you'd also say that there's, I understand there's key things that need to change at that club, but I also think that there's off-the-field things that maybe are a problem as well. I mean, you know, the debate over Gazidis and Wenger, then there's also the way that the fans treat the players as well. It is partly just that the fans seem to mistrust Wenger, and I think maybe what you're basically alluding to is it's a time for a change of coaching staff and a change in tactics.
Or a change of striker, maybe.
Well, I'd probably go for a change in coaching staff and see where that goes.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like he's going to be... I think his contract expires, if I'm not wrong, at the end of next season. And I don't see how Wenger's going to fall on his sword, say, this summer. So I think he will be there for at least another year. So it'll be interesting to see what their recruitment policy is like. Speaking of which, let's finish off with a little bit of transfer news, because there's been some juicy gossip floating around, Dave. Ooh. Not least of which, Mats Hummels is on his way back to Bayern Munich, by the looks of it. He's apparently requested a transfer now. It looked like he might be leaving, might be going to Barcelona or come to the Premier League. But now Bayern Munich, of all teams. We did mention on Sunday, going back to another Dortmund player going to the rivals. It's just...
It's a good direction,
is the rumours.
Oh, yeah, but the Dortmund fans absolutely hate Mario Götze after the way he left. Signing before the final of the Champions League, obviously, with the two great clubs playing each other. What was the semi-final, sorry? Which it could have put them off massively. And it's just a bit... I don't know, it feels a bit like he's let them down in a way. Hummels did come through the Bayern Academy and so forth. But he's been the leader of this Borussia Dortmund team for a number of years now. It just feels like, why? Why not do that? You've seen all these other players do that and break the bond with these wonderful fans. Is there just another player doing that? It's a bit upsetting.
He is, especially when he was linked to Manchester United, there were quotes coming from Hummels to the effect of, he doesn't want to, like you say, break that special relationship with fans. He wants to do it now, though, apparently. So he's
probably going to
another juicy rumour, this is also concerning Bayern Munich, Arturo Vidal to Chelsea. This one is in the Metro. Apparently there's been some talks between the club and Vidal's agent.
Although apparently just moved to Bayern in the press just the other day and say, I would never want to leave this club, I want to retire here.
I mean, that's pretty emphatic.
Somebody's just been going through Conte's notes of when he joined Juventus.
Yeah, pretty much.
I'm not sure this one had been. There's that quote you've attributed to Vidal there. He only went to Bayern at the start of this season. I mean, I know Guardiola leaving might throw question marks over the future of some players at Bayern Munich, but still. It's difficult to see him moving to Chelsea, especially when maybe they're already signing Raja Nainggolan from Roma. Doesn't quite add up, I don't think.
Yeah, I think it would be unusual. I also think there's still a long way to go for him at Bayern. Although I'd say he didn't have the best of games tonight against Atletico Madrid.
Well, I thought he was brilliant, Vidal.
I thought he had
a really, really combative game.
I think he was pushed a little bit too far forward
in the second half. I thought that was a bit of another tactical mistake from Guardiola, was he was trying to get Vidal in the box more. But what Vidal was doing so well in the first half was distributing from midfield and then getting into the box. His starting position was too high in the second half. And again, kind of broke up Bayern's rhythm and effectiveness in the final third. But I thought he was combative. I think that's the brilliant thing about Vidal, is he gets around people and he gets stuck into them.
That's what he needed
pretty
to
much, yeah. Suit Chelsea then, Dave.
Yeah, definitely. It would sort of suit Chelsea down to a T. It would suit the Premier League of how energetic and how he can press and so forth. And again, it'd suit Atletico Madrid. You could see Vidal interchanging with any one of those four midfield players and fitting in perfectly. So it could be an interesting summer for Vidal, but I imagine Ancelotti's going to have his way of words with him, and he'll stay for another three seasons and retire, like Lauren said, at Bayern Munich.
Finally, I want to talk a little bit about Christian Pulisic. Ranked as one of the most promising young players to ever come through the United States. Playing for Borussia Dortmund at the moment, Dave. All the rumours about this kid. He's apparently on his way to either Liverpool, he's on his way to Real Madrid, he's on his way out of Borussia Dortmund, apparently.
Straight out, 17 years old, played a handful of games, scored a goal in the Bundesliga, and he's gone. Unnecessary bollocks from the media again. But anyway, let's discuss it. Where would he fit best?
Go on then, Dave. Where would he fit
just
best?
Talk to me about the player then.
He's a sort of a wide player that play on the right, play on the left. He's got a great goal scoring record at the under-19s level. His assists and goals this season, I think they were even above the 20s in that category. But he's come onto the scene. He's picked up quite a few appearances for Dortmund when they've been in the Europa League. Obviously, they concentrate on that, so they play the younger players at the weekend. He's a nice player. He's a nice ball player. He's He's got a decent touch on him. He's quite small. He's quite slight. Decent dribble. Got a low. It's quite a little. He reminds me a little bit of Mario Götze with how he is on the ball. And you know, give the lad time. He's 17. Yeah, he could flop. He could be the best player in the world. But you know, a move for him now would be just suicidal. And I think that he likes Dortmund and he's grown up there and so forth. So why would you leave?
He's the especially youngest player in Bundesliga history to score 2 league goals in exactly. one game, I assume. Good so case. That's where all the hype is coming from. That's where all the rumours are coming from.
Mad rumours.
Apparently. Anyway, that brings an end to this week's Front 3 podcast. Thank you very much for listening. I had a great time. Have you had a great time, Lawrence?
I did enjoy it. The Champions League this week has been a decent start. I feel satisfied at the end of it.
Cagey, I thought. A bit cagey.
Cagey, yeah, as they say in Europe, yeah.
Yeah, as they say nowhere. Dave, thank you very much for joining us. Have a good time today.
Yeah, I want to leave us on one note, something I tweeted post-game. Gary Lineker saying, Atletico are like the Spanish Leicester City. Didn't they get to the Champions League final recently? Well, you know, I want to leave that with Gary, that he's making silly assessments on European football again. I got a cracking response. I think the fella might have deleted it, actually. Oh, it might be. Oh, no, here we go. Here we go. So, the response from Vintage Simeone, Gary Lineker is a crisp shagging cunt.
Oh,
and then wow. Another reply, Gary Lineker also shags crisps. So, you know, obviously pissed this fella off. But, you know, it was a
I mean, what
rather amusing response.
Do you think it's a bit unusual to call someone a crisp shagger?
Yeah, I think that would be one unusual, difficult, okay. One very unusual, and
very painful.
Pretty damn insulting. Yeah, very painful.
Before we go, I want to give comment of the week this week to Munjo98, who left us an iTunes review. He called it his Front 3 journey. From Football Daily to the start of the Football Republic to a year of the Front 3 podcast. I'm glad to say I've been through this journey of great footballing opinions and actual entertaining football talk. What a great year. I hope for an even better one next year. Thank you very much, Munjo98. You are comment of the week. Guys, if you want to leave us a review of being with a chance of being comment of the week yourself, get on your podcast app, preferably iTunes, rate it 5 stars, preferably, and write a little review for us. It'll be much appreciated. Until the weekend, Lawrence, where can the good people find you on Twitter?
Los Castello, Z-C-A-S-T. Dave?
D-A-V-E-T-A-L-K-S on the Twitter.
Is that your Twitter handle now? Have you changed it?
No, that's Dave Talks on YouTube. Sorry, fuck, lads.
Yeah.
Bottled it. Sorry,
YouTube,
I meant on
guys.
YouTube.
Ignore everything Dave has said.
Yeah, just ignore me.
You can
it's all right, they've been
Twitter
practicing for an hour.
At Biltwood, or you can go on YouTube to the Football Republic. I'm there, Lawrence is there, Dave's there. We're all having a great time. Until the weekend, have a great Thursday and Friday. And enjoy yourselves.
Bye. Bye. Dave. Bye.
See.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.